Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You know, when the first minutes turned and it was midnight and it was after midnight and deals could happen and we didn't sign Hassan Whiteside, everyone was like, what? And then we got Evan Turner and everyone was like,
Look how fancy this microphone is.
I know, I'm pretty impressed. I got nothing like that.
I just got this stand thing that makes it look like a laser. It didn't look nearly as fancy before.
Looks like you're getting ready to get LASIK surgery.
Look at that, it's so dope.
Nice.
But anyways, I'm good to go, Kara. So I'm going to go ahead and say, welcome to Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast. And I'm here today with Tara Bowen, right?
Tara Bowen Biggs.
The T part of the Tara and Joe combination on the Blazers Edge podcast. Now, Tara, you're here today to talk about what team, and also what's your Twitter for the folks at home?
So I am here to talk about the Portland Trail Blazers, my beloved hometown team. You can find me on Twitter at TCBBiggs. That's TCB and then another B, IGGS. You could also just search for Team Mom, because that's the other handle I go by. If you look for Team Mom, you'll find me. And I have bright red bangs, so you'll know that it's me.
And is that a Blazers thing? Or is it just because it looks cool?
Well, I chose red for a reason, and that is for the Trailblazers. Actually right now, if you see it, it's like kind of a little pale pink. It needs to be freshened up. I re-dyed it right before Summer League, because I went down to Summer League, and I wanted to represent the team. But, you know, a little time has gone by. I'll do it. I'll make sure I'm ready for by preseason. I'll have red hair again.
That makes sense. For Summer League, like, that's pretty good representing. I mean, a lot of people were reporting about seeing cool, weird jerseys, like a Vancouver Sharif Abdul-Rahim jersey.
Yeah.
But, I mean, dyed hair, team colors, you can't get a lot better than that.
Summer League is fun.
This year, I was just a stay-at-home peasant, you know, but...
It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kept track of Summer League and stuff. You know, I watched some of the games just from home.
Well, you didn't miss much. Terry Stotts is not a coach who relies heavily on the very young players. And so we're in a position this year where I'm not too worried about how our season is going to go based on how our Summer League went.
So it makes most sense to just jump into the Blazers from there. But
sure.
On the way over here in the car, I thought of a joke, and I have to go there. It could be really quick.
Okay.
I was going to say I'm here with the Tara portion of the Tara and Joe tandem, because Joe is in Alaska, and I presume because she's preparing for her 2020 vice presidential campaign. You know, looking at Russia, just making sure that there's nothing going on there, you know, getting ready.
Yeah, I'm sure that... I'm not sure if she can see Russia from where she is. She's in Juneau, and I have to admit, I don't know my Alaska geography as I should. But she's also on the lookout for Blazer fans, and last week, she had somebody stop by her booth on the waterfront who recognized her from the podcast. So that was, like, super exciting for us.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Oh, do you guys do a video cast?
No, we don't. But they recognized her voice, and she was talking about the Blazers, and they were obviously big Blazer fans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
so
cool.
It's pretty funny. Actually, Joe and I, we went to a game together, and we were leaving, and we were talking about what had just happened, and she was saying something really smart because she's the smart half of this duo, and then I was saying something like really irreverent because that's me, and this guy in front of us turned around and he was like, hey, are you Tara and Joe from the podcast? And oh my god, we were so excited.
Okay.
Couldn't believe it.
Just so you know, fans at home, there's nothing better than A, having someone else talk about you on their podcast, right? Okay?
Yes,
and
it's
B,
super cool.
Having someone recognize you or hearing your podcast while you're out in public being played by someone else. The other day, I was at a mall, and I was leaving, and I was playing my podcast because I had just posted it, and I was just checking to make sure there wasn't any problems. And someone, like, stopped me and was like, hey, are you listening to Almighty Ballin'? I was like, yeah, I am. And they were like, oh, that's really awesome. What team do you represent?
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, you know, I cover the whole league. And he was like, ah, that's you.
That's so cool.
It was so cool.
It is, because we have these conversations and who knows if anyone's actually listening. So it's always thrilling to find out, oh, somebody did listen. It was worth it.
I had to start putting trackers on all my stuff because you had to be able to go up to advertisers and say, like, this is my numbers, like, you know, bow before me or whatever, you know? And that's been cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
I mean,
Joe and I are really lucky because we're part of an established network, Blazer's Edge.
Yeah.
I don't know if you spent much
Blazer's
time.
Blazer's Edge is great.
Yeah. And so we joined them and they were already established and they already had a lot of people listening. So we were really lucky that we were able to step in with their audience. I'm afraid to look and see how much it drops off every time one of our episode comes up, because Joe and I are definitely very different from the rest of the podcasts on the network.
Yeah, but that's
but
great.
She and I sure have a great time doing it.
You know, at the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, different is what we're all about. We're looking for a trip down a different avenue, and I gotta say, your numbers don't dip, if that's the case, which I doubt, because of me, because if I see Tara and Joe, I listen to that episode hands down, and
oh,
I'm subscribed to so many podcasts, so...
That is so nice to hear. Thank you so much for saying that. That warms my heart.
Yeah,
thank
no,
you.
Absolutely. I mean, I try to listen to team-specific podcasts, mm-hmm. at least one for every team, and so that's who I invite on for these team previews that I'm doing, and you guys were the people who I was like, Blazers, boom, Tara and Joe, so...
That is so nice, and I am super honored because you get some amazing guests on your podcast. I've been listening to your team previews, and I'm just like, I can't believe that I get to talk to you after you've talked to all these people who know what they're talking about.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I've been really happy with my guests, but man, you you fit perfectly into the fold, and hey, so, okay, I think the biggest thing about last year in the Portland Trailblazers, the number one thing that started to come into fruition that's going to be significant going forward, after the first year of the Damian Lillard experiment, right, without LaMarcus Aldridge, without Nicholas Batum, you know, without 4 out of 5 pieces of their starting lineup, the Trailblazers were clearly really happy and they started to establish a culture that once they win a championship, right, will be a championship culture. They just seem like they really know what they're doing up in Portland. So that's got to bring a lot of optimism to the Trailblazers fan base because it's just a happy place to be, it seems.
Sure. You know, last year on 4th of July, it was not a super happy place to be. That was the morning that LaMarcus Aldridge told us all that he was leaving. And frankly, it shocked most of the fan base, not all of the fan base. But, you know, he'd been quoted as saying things like he wanted to retire a Blazer. And so many of us, including me, believed that that was the case. And I also believe that when he said it, that's what he meant. However, life happens,
yeah.
Things change, new opportunities present themselves, and so on the morning of 4th of July, Independence Day, just like this year, a big star said goodbye to the team that he'd been on his entire time.
I assume you're talking about Evan Turner.
Yeah. So so when LaMarcus left, it was really rough. Fans were very upset. They were hurt. They thought, a lot of us, you know, took it personally, like, oh, he hates the fans, he hates Portland. And, you know, so that was rough, but we all got over it. And right away, the Blazers organization jumped in and said, we are 100% behind Damian Lillard.
Right, yeah.
And we'd already seen the beginning of what Damian Lillard could be, but they came out and they were like, this organization is Damian Lillard's now, and we're going to do everything that Damian Lillard wants to do. We're going to do everything we can to make him successful, and we're going to draft players around him that are his age, that are on his career trajectory, and that's how we're going to go forward. And so... You know, what could we, like, we couldn't say, no, you don't do that. We were like, okay,
yeah.
So we'll see what happens. And so we welcomed a whole bunch of new players last year. And one of the things in Portland that's also really important, it probably is true for every fan base, But it's very important to our fan base that we have guys of a really good character who blend really well together, because we went through a few periods where that wasn't the case. And so we're pretty
Jailblazers.
Yeah, we're pretty sensitive to making sure that the guys have a strong character and are a very cohesive group. So we watched that unfold this year in a way that was like really exciting, because the team well before the season started, like well before the preseason even started, had already gotten together. They went on this now famous trip down to San Diego.
Yeah,
they had a ball. They clearly liked each other as people. And so we were like, okay, well, that's a good narrative. We'll follow that. Let's see what happens when they get on the floor. And then when they got on the floor, we learned that basically McLillard developed, and that's what we call Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. We learned about what McLillard could do, and that was, they were, you know, a really important duo.
Well, before I jump into that duo, I do want to sort of say, with the whole Damian Lillard thing, it seems like Damian Lillard is exactly the type of superstar you want, where, you know, we just saw the retiring of a guy, Tim Duncan, who was the penultimate locker room guy, just did what he needed to do, you know, set an example for the rest of the players. You know, on the other side of the spectrum, you see the damage that it can potentially do to a franchise if you have a guy like James Harden who comes in a little overweight and he doesn't call 1 through 15. He doesn't have their cell phone numbers, you know, on speed dial like Damian has, you know, with his buddy Tim Frazier. You know, he doesn't, you know, try to do bonding exercises like that. But that's part of the thing, right, is that Damian Lillard, to be a centerpiece of a franchise, you have to be superstar talented. But to be a centerpiece of a dynasty, you have to be a guy like Damian Lillard. So you have that piece in place, and that's the hardest piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the, like, Joe and I argue a lot because she loves Anthony Davis. And we have, every once in a while, we'll fall into this discussion about who would you rather build a franchise around. And I would without hesitation, I would build a franchise around Damian Lillard, because from the first day he showed up, he was ready to lead. Yeah. And he was ready to do whatever he needed to do. And even though at that point LaMarcus Aldridge was sort of the de facto leader, Damian Lillard was ready to take on whatever he needed. He was ready to take on any interviews. He was ready to, like, talk to the coach. He was ready to do whatever a leader does. So worth, you know, I would say for the most part, I don't know anybody who wouldn't say we're happy that we have a franchise that we're building around Damian Lillard.
The fact that you can have a discussion, you know, saying, okay, who would I rather build around? Anthony Davis, who, you know, by all eye tests, all numbers tests, everything, is clearly going to be an amazing player. Mm-hmm. The fact that you can even have that conversation is a fantastic thing, right? And, you know, part of that is establishing, and part of the reason why I would probably, like you, argue that I would rather have Damian Lillard is because it seems to me like Terry Stotts is on the same type of, you know, well, he's got the same wagon hitched to him as Coach Steve Kerr has, where he is insistent on playing 1 through 15. He wants to get everyone involved. There's a lot of stories about Vonleh having a place in the starting lineup, even though potentially he doesn't deserve it in terms of numbers and talent. But he said to the press, like, it looked like he could use that. It looked like he needed that. It looked like his confidence was lacking, and that's what his problem was. And we'll see. I don't know. That type of mindset is interesting, and it pulls me into our next point. When you have a guy in your starting lineup like Noah Vonleh, being a starter doesn't really mean as much. So instead, I want to know, what do you think the main five is going to be? So whoever closes the game, whoever is going to, like, be the best lineup with the most minutes, that lineup, rather than whoever starts, because Terry Stotts is going to Terry Stotts.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny that you would ask that, because I spent yesterday afternoon trying to figure out what our lineups were going to look like. And what I actually did is, because I really needed to picture these things, I can't just talk about it like in abstract terms. I actually went to my kids' old Lego sets and I like built the team out of Legos. And I was mixing them all. My whole Twitter feed is full of it. So, yeah. So, yesterday, I actually made the lineup out of Lego. And I was trying to figure out who was going to play who, when, where, most effectively. Because I don't really know what Terry Stotts is going to do. That's one of the things that's kind of fun and exciting about Terry Stotts as a coach, because he throws out stuff that you would never have thought of. For example, yeah. putting Noah Vonleh in the starting lineup.
Right.
I think that I kind of want to answer that question later after I talk about the offseason, because really it's very puzzling to me. One of the things that was true last year is that basically we needed to have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, one of them on the floor at all times, because those were our creators. Every once in a while, Mason Plumlee would take over the ball and he could do some, he actually is really good at getting assists, but pretty much at all times we needed to have either Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum on the field. And I believe that this year the intention of adding Evan Turner was to take some of that, I don't want to call it a burden, because when you're playing on the field, it's never a burden, yeah. but take some of that pressure off of those two so that there would be that third option. And I believe that, at least in some respects, he's really strong on certain defensive moves. And right now, CJ and Dame are not known as terrific defenders, right. although to their credit, they have gotten much better, and I believe that they will continue to grow. So, as far as, like, at the end of the game, Damian's always going to be in. Either because he never, ever shies away from taking that last shot.
Right, yeah.
But at the same time, he never shies away from giving it to the guy who's having a hot night. He had several games last year where he was maybe not having the greatest shooting night, but CJ was, and he never hesitated to give CJ that last shot. He's given Alan Crabb the last shot. So definitely we need Damon to either take the shot or figure out who's going to take that last shot. I'm really interested to see with our big men who's going to be the one that we have to throw in when we absolutely need to get a stop, because Festus Ezeli might be that guy. The bigs that we've had previously, they all have certain defensive capabilities, but none of them where you just like park them.
Yeah.
And Festus Ezeli is somebody, you just stand right there and you just get the ball and don't let anybody near. Ed Davis is a great rebounder, and Ed Davis is super popular in Portland. We love him in Portland. But he doesn't have the same bulk that Festus Ezeli has. So there might be points at the end of the game where we need to just, like, put that big body in. Now, Myers Leonard is somebody who we're going to wait and see what we get from this year. Actually, I'm really curious. I want to ask you this question.
Yeah, I think Myers Leonard is going to be the deciding factor in what the starting lineup is, because I think that there's two starting lineups. And I mean, as far as the way that I think about the game generally is, like, there are people who are, like, analytics driven and there are people who are fantasy basketball driven or whatever. But I try to think of the game like a coach in terms of X's and O's, but mm-hmm. like grab a little bit from everything. And it seems to me like there's two viable lineups or two probable lineups, and they depend on how good Myers Leonard is, which one of the two it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question is just kind of in general. So Myers Leonard is, you probably know, is quite polarizing in Portland. I don't know if he is nationally. He's very polarizing here. And so I just kind of wanted to get an outside point of view. I love to ask people who are not in Rip City itself what your views are. So what do you know and think about Myers Leonard? Not to put you on the spot or anything, but I'm just curious, like, what are your thoughts?
Oh, no. So my thoughts with Myers Leonard is that it's understandable that he's polarizing, because really there are two poles of Myers Leonard. There is a Dr. Jekyll and a Mr. Hyde of Myers Leonard. One is, the sort of unmotivated white 7-foot center who's not quite athletic enough to do it, and he has a good jump shot, allegedly, but he's not making them. And then the other side is a guy who is a phenomenal talent and the incredibly rare, as in probably 15 in the history of the league, 40% shooter from three, who's 7 feet tall, and not a complete defensive liability. So I like him because I'm willing to say that I've heard from enough people, and I know a few people. I'm not one of those people like Woj who has insiders everywhere and ears everywhere, but I do know a few people in Portland, and the people who I know all say that his injury problems were downplayed and that people didn't really understand the extent to which it was screwing him up. And he looked bad, because of injuries. It's like, why did he have this huge drop-off? Because he had so many injuries, and he was dealing with so much stuff. And from his shoulder to, you know, numbness on the whole right side of his body to foot stuff to all this stuff, you know, it really took down his game. So I'm willing to say that's why it was. And I think it's a rare case for someone to be, like, lazy, right, in the NBA, like, or, like, not quite motivated enough. I think that's a lot rarer than people realize. So, anyways, that's my
that's,
take.
That's interesting. It's actually, I've never really heard people talk about him being unmotivated. I've heard about him, people talking about him being unfocused and immature. And I think a lot of that is because the age that he was when he came in the league. And one of the things that I think has been sort of tough on him and made it hard to talk about him, Myers Leonard and Damian Lillard were drafted at the same time. And very moment that Neil Olshey started talking about Myers Leonard, Neil Olshey said, Myers Leonard is going to be a project and we are going to have to wait for his development. And then at the same time, Damian Lillard was ready to go right out the gate.
Yeah.
So the two of them coming in at the same time, I think, is, you know, kind of hard perception-wise because Damian Lillard was just ready to go and Myers is taking a lot longer. But people have come around to the idea that Myers Leonard was going to take a while. And I think last year, in addition to those injury issues that you brought up, I think there were a couple other things that were at play that made it harder for Myers to reach that apex that we were hoping that he was going to get to next year. One of them was he was very, very close to Portland's big man coach. We had this coach named Kim Hughes, and Myers was very close to him, and he learned a lot from him on, you know, how to play his position. And we lost Kim Hughes last summer because at the beginning of the summer, Kim Hughes let it slip that Portland knew that LaMarcus Aldridge was leaving before the announcement had been made. And he said it in an interview. And so Kim Hughes was gone. And I think that was really hard on Myers Leonard because he was somebody who'd really looked up to as a mentor. And he learned basically everything he learned about the NBA. He'd been picking up from Kim Hughes. And then the other thing that happened is that LaMarcus Aldridge left. And Myers Leonard, I haven't been to any practices, but I'm pretty sure they spent a lot of time going up against each other in practice. And without somebody better to play against every day, I think that also contributed to slowing down a little bit of Myers Leonard's progress because he wasn't going up. He had nobody else who was better than him to go up against to, like, you know, help him raise the bar of his own play. So I don't think we can say that Myers Leonard didn't progress because when you look at his sustained numbers, when he did get sustained play, they were not as terrible as people make out, and they got better over time. And then when that second injury occurred, it was like, okay, we got to shut him down and figure this out. But I'm really, really hoping that this is the year that he comes out because I think that he does have a lot of skills that people are going to have a hard time defending against. And in addition, he's really smart and he really, really learns when he's focused. And from what I've seen him, the way he's matured over the last year since he's been with the Blazers, I think that he's, like, ready to take on that responsibility. And he wants to be that leader next to Dame and CJ. He really wants to be that person. So I just hope that we can see it this year and that the fans will give him a little bit of a break and then recognize him when he does achieve what I hope is his potential with us. Because you know what I really don't want to see? Myers Leonard is going to be a really good, solid NBA player. I'm totally convinced of that. He's going to be a solid NBA player. He's going to be coming, and I don't want to see him coming off of someone else's bench bringing it to us. Because in my nightmares, he's coming off of San Antonio's bench and just killing us. And I don't want San Antonio to get another player of ours, and I don't want them to use him against us.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that probably going forward, the biggest hole, as far as, you know, if you want to say the 2020 Blazers looks like, you know, this, and hopefully, you know, Neil O'Shea is going to have a team built at that point. It's going to be Damian Lillard's prime. And, you know, while there is plenty of time to figure out what your rotation is going to be, championship or contender quality big men don't fall out of the sky. So I think that they probably have their rotation in some ways figured out 1 through 4, but their center is sort of a question mark. I love Ed Davis, but he's just not a starter. Like, that's just not his deal. I think that, if anything, Festus Ezeli's contract to me is a huge red flag. I mean, what that tells me is that he went in to plenty of places and they checked out his knee and gave it an MRI and their medical staff said no thank you. That's eerie for a team that drafted Greg Oden.
Oh yeah, you don't have to tell us that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to put my chips on Festus Ezeli, but you know, I mean, if he works out, I've never been the hugest Festus Ezeli fan, but he's not bad.
What I look at Festus Ezeli is he's kind of, I don't want to call him insurance, but he's what we can start with before Myers gets himself fully back in the swing of things. Because the reports are that Myers might be ready to start playing by the beginning of the season, but he won't be in full form until later on in the season. And so we will have Festus Ezeli able to cover that. And then if Myers is able to, you know, completely show us what he's got, we won't need to keep Festus Ezeli for that second year, but we've got him now to kind of fill that gap as Myers comes in and gets better. I think probably Plumlee is still going to start. But like I said, I don't know. I was just moving those little Lego guys around, just going, I don't even know who's going to start where and when. And like Myers was really effective off the bench last
year.
Well,
I mean, that start.
who's going to play?
Be the best lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I had a bunch of lineups all like, this is a defensive lineup. This is an offensive lineup. This is a big guy lineup. This is a smaller guy lineup. But yeah, who knows who's going to be there at the beginning, like when the whistle blows.
Calling me. No, I'm just kidding. Well, right, okay, so it's the moment you've all been waiting for, listener. I'm going to go ahead and say what I think those two lineups are probably going to look like. So, like I said, it's based on Myers-Leonard, and if Myers-Leonard takes a while to get into it, so he's not starting, from 1 to 5, Dame, CJ, Evan Turner, Aminu, and then Plumlee at 5. And then if Miles Plumlee does look good,
Mason.
I think it'll be... Oh, yeah, Mason Plumlee.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, it'll be Dame, CJ, Harkless, Aminu, and Myers-Leonard, I think. So it's going to be one of those two.
Yeah, and, you know, Terry Stotts is so situational, and he's never afraid to, like, throw some new thing in.
Right, exactly.
Especially
yeah.
when we're, you know, playing a team a second or third time, and we need to try something else. Yeah, I'm just going to keep going back to my little Lego figures and keep moving them around and seeing what I can come up with. But I'm glad I'm not the coach.
Yeah.
Because he's got a lot of pieces this year. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with them.
Yeah, well, one interesting aspect of it is it's really good to have flexibility like that. But what you would hope out of a team is that your autopilot forces other teams to change their rotations. So... the Warriors are going to do their thing, and it's a death lineup because it's a buzzsaw no matter what you do. So they force other people to change. So I think in ways it's a little bit concerning that that's the case, that there is that level of flexibility when it comes to how they're going to close the game. But on the other hand, I mean, it's fine that the Blazers aren't quite there. I mean, And, you know, the reality of the West this year is that I could see the Blazers being the second in the West, and I could see them not making the playoffs. You know,
I could see, yeah, a variety of things happening.
Yeah, yeah. But the Blazers, what it does mean that they have so much rotation flexibility is that, you know, they tend to have close games. And normally that means that you have a really good coach, right? When you win close games, it's because you make changes like that. So, you know, they keep it close through rebounding. You know, they're not the most efficient shooting team, but they get their offensive rebounds. They're not super sloppy. They are really good at switching on defense, so they're decent at that. And they get to the end of games, and then they can change stuff like that. They can move their rotation around a little bit, and it generally works. So I think that's a great aspect of the Blazers roster that, you know, you were talking about seeing Myers-Leonard eventually coming off the bench for the Spurs or something. But, you know, if you had Myers-Leonard coming off the bench in Portland, like, that's a good player to have. And maybe... you are going against the Clippers, and you want DeAndre Jordan as far away from the basket as possible because Dame can't create. That's good.
DeAndre Jordan, I believe he's the one who said that he does not like playing against Myers-Leonard. And other centers in the league don't like playing against Myers-Leonard. I don't know what Myers-Leonard is saying or doing, but it works for me. If other centers don't like to play him, that's good. That's what we want to happen.
Well, that's probably part of it, at least subconsciously, is that centers don't want to get out of their comfort zone within the key, I mean, near the paint. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I bet it's irritating for DeAndre Jordan. I mean, Myers Leonard is also probably annoying, and they're jealous of how handsome he is. But, I mean, like, it's irritating. You could tell that even really good centers like Whiteside get out of their element if they have to get out of the paint.
Uh-huh.
That John Wall, he sure knows how to throw a dime, right, guys?
He throws a lot of dimes.
You know, it would be a good decision for him to throw a few dimes at FanEssentials.net. The great thing about FanEssentials.net is that it only costs you a few dimes.
Let's say you have a team that you like. They have boxes for whatever team that you like. Oliver, would you like to know more about these FanEssentials boxes?
Yes, I would definitely like to know more.
So, guess what? You can get it even cheaper if you use promo code ALMIGHTY. If you can figure out how to spell that word, you can get 30% off, even less dime. And say you want a bigger box.
I definitely want the bigger box because I'm not the Nate Robinson of Fan Essentials boxes.
What about if you're Shaquille O'Neal and you need an extra, extra large? Could that be arranged?
Well, of course. You've got the extra large size. We've got the extra small size. You got the medium or the small and the medium.
If you're listening with your significant other or insignificant, spring for male or female, whichever you want, whatever suits you.
Apparently, there's a lot of sizes of these boxes, though. Do you know anything about these?
$14.99 gets you the rookie package, and you can guarantee it's at least of rookie capacity.
So even if you're picked in the second round, you can still afford Fan Essentials.
Exactly. And then you get the bigger size, which is $34.99, and that's your veteran packet. That gets you all the goods that you'd ever want in 1 month's supply.
Like Brandon Roy package.
Brandon Roy package would only be good for about 4 years, and then it would disintegrate. I can say that it would be a good investment for 4 years.
It sure would be a better pick than Greg Oden.
Very true. Can't argue with you there.
Al Farouk. I mean, Al Farouk, you.
What are you talking about?
Hey, don't get crabby with me. I mean, you'd be crazy to not get this deal.
That's the thing. You don't know what comes in the box. You're going to get beach balls. You're going to get flip-flops. You're going to get towels. You never know it.
You have spots to be kidding me.
I'm losing my mind.
Losing your mind with great prices?
All I can think about is one thing. Do you know what's on my mind right now?
Trying to get those Fan Essentials boxes.
The promo code ALMIGHTY.
Why do you think the promo code is ALMIGHTY?
Because it's ALMIGHTY for giving you 30% off.
What a ballin' deal. I sure would look like a baller.
That's the best thing you could possibly ask for.
That's a slam dunk.
That is a slam dunk.
Like Latrell Sprewell, we need millions of dollars to feed ourselves and our families. So please buy millions of Fan Essentials boxes.
30% off. That's a huge chunk of change there.
You know what I would do?
Fan Essentials.
Order a Fan Essentials.
Fan Essentials. Absolutely. So we talked a little bit about CJ and Dame as a backcourt, and you offhand mentioned that you think that's fine going forward. So what is your defense for that? Because you also mentioned in that same breath that there are some defensive problems and defense wins championships. I'm just kidding. Good basketball wins championships. It's fine.
So there's a couple of things about that. I just want to back up just a little bit and say, just kind of taking a holistic view of this offseason, it's really pretty straightforward when you look at it, because basically Neil Olshey went out and he finished inking all the guys that he drafted. So Neil Olshey's guys are now all in place. He drafted Aminu when he was with the Clippers, brought him over here. He drafted Dame, so those were taken care of. And now he's taking care of CJ and Crab and Myers Leonard. So Neil Olshey has now got all his guys on board for, you know, the next several years. And I think that's what he said that he was going to do all along. So as far as Dame and CJ moving forward together, some of the things that people say in Portland, and, you know, so I'm a fan. I'm not an analyst. That's why Joe and I call ourselves the fanalists. So I'll tell you, like, from a fan's perspective, we do a lot of wondering if Dame and CJ are too similar to be on the floor at the same time. When we compare ourselves to teams like Golden State, which is, whether or not that's a fair comparison or not, you know, they have Steph and Clay, who bring very different skill sets to the floor. And so they, you know, they fit together in a certain way. And when you look at Dame and CJ, they're essentially both point guards, and they're both playing point guards. Just one has the ball and one doesn't. So there's been some talk about whether or not that is a sustainable lineup. And I think certainly they've shown that offensively that works just great. And I think one of the reasons that they added Evan Turner is to bring some defense to their ball handlers, because Evan Turner is also a ball handler. Alan Crabb can play decent defense, but he's not necessarily a ball handler. So if you have Dame and CJ and Alan Crabb on, you've got three people for whom defense is not what they're known for currently. But if you bring Evan Turner on, you've got, you know, a guy who has shown a little bit more development in that area. That having been said, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year last year, Joe and I felt that we could see a lot of improvement in Damian. One of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the year was that Damian wasn't beating people into position, and he wasn't standing as close to people when he was guarding them. And we noticed that by the end of the season, Damian had closed that gap between him and the person that he'd been guarding. You know, he was 6 or 8 inches closer to them than he'd been at the beginning of the year. Maybe it's because he's not as afraid of fouling anymore, or if he's just getting more comfortable up in that tight, close space. But we noticed that Damian had really closed that gap between him and the person that he'd been defending. And he was also now beating people into place. And I don't know if that's a result of him just like flat out just having gotten faster and been able to sprint faster, or if it's because he's gotten better at knowing where they're going to go so he can go and beat them into that position. But from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, we did see quite a bit of improvement in Damian's defense. And I think CJ can begin to apply himself, but I think CJ has other things that he needs to get better at first. Like, one thing I think CJ needs to get better at is getting to the free throw line.
Yeah.
So I think it might be a little bit longer before CJ fully blossoms into his defense. I think Damian is about a year ahead of him in that respect.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think the reality with CJ is probably that he's never going to be a plus defender. It's a question of how bad is he going to be, you know, and you hope that he's going to be less bad. But I'm not sure if you've ever looked at it from this perspective, but I think that you can reconcile a lot of the problems by looking at it this way. And if you want to steal this, like, please go ahead.
Okay.
So mathematically, it works. At the end of the day, offense and defense balance out. So if you have bad defense, that's fine. But if you're going to go on the offensive end, and they're going to be able to develop so that both of them can hit 40%+ from three, they're going to give up points on the defensive end, but their offense is going to be so undeniable that the math works out. It just works.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to compensate for that defense, you know, a lot, right? But, I mean, the reality is if you have two guards pulling up from three, two guards who can, like, create offense out of nowhere.
And a center.
Well, yeah, right. Well, I mean, like, I'm not sure he does a lot of dribbling, but, like, that's interesting, right? His effect, potentially, on stretching the opposing team's defense. But you get what I'm saying, right? Like, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, they're bad at defense, but the offensive potential, those 50 points that are hyper-efficient because their shooting is only going to get better as a tandem as they learn to synergize and get open on some of the interesting, like, guard-on-guard pick-and-pops and some of the crazy, wonky stuff that they can do splitting the court together. It's just going to be enough on offense that mathematically it works.
That's a really great point, and it's one that I actually heard Terry Stotts make earlier this year, and it was fantastic. He was, I think he was maybe on the Jim Rome show. He was on a national show, and we were just getting, the next day, I think we were playing Golden State. And the interviewer said, you know, so how are you guys, joking around, he was like, so how are you guys going to beat Golden State tomorrow? And Terry Stotts said with an absolutely straight face, deadpan, he said, well, we're going to outscore them. And that's exactly what they did. They went out the next night and they just beat Golden State by outscoring them. And I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. That's exactly how you beat Golden State, is you outscore them. And that's I think that's kind of like close to the point that you were making, is that, like,
yeah,
when it takes care of itself.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, like, I said earlier, right, like, defense wins championship, but actually, no, it's not. Like, good basketball does.
More points,
yeah,
wins championships.
Right, exactly, yeah. It'll be great if the best case scenario, which is that CJ is just good enough that he can cover opposing teams' point guards, and Damian Lillard is just developed enough defensively that he's going to be able to deal with opposing team shooting guards. Like, that'll be awesome if they can start to compensate on defense, but that is only going to go so far. They're never going to be like Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart when they're on the court together.
No, but we now have Evan Turner, who was playing with them as well.
Well, yeah, that is an interesting aspect to all of it, too. And I think that that's part of the reason why they looked at Evan Turner and thought, you know, specifically, like, you know, we want this guy in particular, because Evan Turner was playing defensive free safety or whatever for Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, that signing was, let's say, controversial.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? That's a conversation to have.
So, the Evan Turner signing, as I said, was somewhat controversial in Portland. And I think mainly, if the money was not involved, everybody would be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But the money was what made everybody just, like, drop what they were doing and, you know, stand there with their mouths open. And I really think that as fans, we can't worry about the money because we don't know what's going on. We don't know why people are paying what they're paying for the people that they're signing. We just have to pay attention to, okay, what role is he going to fill on our team? And in a lot of ways, the role that he's going to fill on our team makes a lot of sense. Now, you've put the money aside. Basically, what happened is we replaced Gerald Henderson with Evan Turner. If you look at, you know, their numbers from last year, they're very, very similar, except for Evan Turner has more assists.
Yeah.
So they, like I said, they wanted to have another ball handler added to the rotation who could be on the court. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And I'm just not worried about the numbers because some people will go to Bloomingdale's and pay $100 for a t-shirt and some people will go to Target and pay $8 for a t-shirt. And I don't know why anybody chooses to shop where they choose, but in the end, you got the t-shirt you needed. And so as a fan, I'm just saying, hopefully we got the piece that we needed to continue to help our team move forward. Now, Alan Crabb, I was pretty shocked at that one. Really, when I saw that Brooklyn had offered Alan Crabb $75 million, I was like, you know, good on you, Alan Crabb. Go get paid. I'm like super happy. We love Alan Crabb in Portland. He's really, really popular. But everyone was kind of like, okay, well, Alan Crabb's going to be get paid. That's awesome. What we forgot is that at the beginning of free agency, Neil Olshey said, I'm going to match anything. And we, like, had forgotten about that. But Neil Olshey had said, I'm going to do what I need to do to re-sign our restricted free agents. And what do you know? He did exactly what he said he was going to do. He matched. So, obviously, you know, Alan Crabb is, well, not obviously, nothing's, I'm guessing, Alan Crabb is one of those pieces that Neil Olshey committed to from the beginning. He's one of those guys that Neil Olshey drafted. And he's one of those guys that, he's on the team of the future for the Trailblazers. Last year, when the Trailblazers outperformed, I think generally people in Portland are realistic, and we know that they played beyond what we know that they played beyond themselves. And I think a lot of us realize that if they do that well this year, I don't think that's, even if they don't win more games this year, I don't think people are going to see that as a failure of the season. I think people are going to be coming at us harder this year. They know our game better this year. So I think if we can pull out basically what we did last year, in my mind, that will have been a success. And in my mind, Evan Turner and Alan Crabb, even with their gigantic salaries, are going to contribute to that.
Yeah. Well, I think that, well, so first,
I should have taken a breath in there somewhere. Sorry. I talk a lot.
No, it's all good. Podcasts are people talking, so that just means you're really, really good at it. So you mentioned fans don't really understand or get it with the money thing, and that's sort of true. Some people are CBA nerds. Some people get into that. Some people have a good understanding of basketball, but like, there's maybe five people in basketball who are as complex thinkers as Neil Olshey when it comes to cap management and roster management and stuff. And I think what Neil Olshey does, or what Neil Olshey understands by watching example after example after example from the Lakers to the Mavericks, that free cap space is not an asset. You know, like, players are assets, draft picks are assets, but just having the money to sign a free agent, like, it would have been great if that money, you know, if that free agent money had been a Hassan Whiteside. That would have been awesome. It would have been even better if that had been a Kevin Durant, but he's not there, right? So instead you have, you know, valuable players on contracts that are going to be movable because Neil O'Shea says that they're going to be good, and I'm willing to say that that's likely. They're all young, so they're not going to, like, depreciate. It's not like, you know, you're driving a 1960 Ford Pinto off the lot. Like, it's going to be valuable, right? And as they figure out which pieces they want to keep and which pieces they don't, they can move things around, and maybe, you know, DeMarcus Cousins is upset. They can say, like, you know, we have all these things that we can give you if you want to move DeMarcus Cousins here. So I think that's what the Trailblazers are thinking, is that, you know, maybe Crabb will be on the roster as a six man. And if that's the case, you can't have another six man like Evan Turner being paid. That's fine. Trade Evan Turner. Get someone else. Like, that's awesome. And I think that the Blazers have enough confidence in their scouts, their pro scouts, like the people looking at other teams and saying, okay, like, who am I willing to move, that they're confident that they'll get what they want out of any deal for any of these young assets that they're developing if they end up finding something out like, oh, Myers Leonard isn't good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, downplay the value of understanding how the CBA works and how salary cap works. And, you know, it's important to understand that. And my personal feeling is that the writers on Blazers Edge are fantastic at explaining these really complex what's going on with salary caps. I read their articles all the time, and I'm so grateful that they take the time to, like, explain exactly what's going on. So I don't want to say it's not important to understand how all of that works, but I think as a fan, if you pay too much attention to the dollars that are being spent, you're just going to get hopelessly depressed trying to say, okay, this guy's making this much money, he should be playing this way. This guy's making this much money, he should be playing this way. You have to just put that aside, let, you know.
So you mean, like, from a, he's only an okay player, why is he getting $100 million?
Yeah, you can't, mean, like, focus on that.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
You can't.
I agree.
You gotta let it go, because you'll just make yourself crazy. And it's hard to do when, and I'm really curious about whether or not that's going to affect the players in any way. I like to think it won't. In my Pollyanna world, I go, the guys aren't going to sit there. But if you've got somebody who's making $17 million, he's playing next to a guy who's making $10 million, and the guy making $17 million isn't starting, and he's like, you know, I don't know. Is that going to affect them at all? Is that going to affect their relationships? Is that going to affect their interplay? I'm hoping it doesn't. And that's another place where I just feel like we just got to let that part go. Let the teams take care of that and focus on the players and their skills and what they bring.
Yeah, we're on the network about to start a podcast, Hoops Historians. So, you know, I've been listening.
Oh, cool. Oh, I love historical stuff. I love it. I'm excited.
Yeah, well, and history tends to indicate. You know, I was listening the other day to this podcast, and they talked about that 70s Celtics team that broke up, and the reason it broke up is because a star was used to this other guy in a six-man role, in a role-player role, and then the role-player guy broke out and then was paid all this money, and then mentally to the star, he's like, but he shouldn't be making as much money as me, he's a role-player, so they had to trade him for someone else, like, even though he wasn't as good. But just because they wanted that guy to deal with the cognitive dissonance of, this guy's supposed to be a role player, but now he's a star, and I don't like that. So history indicates that things like this cap spike are bad. But, you know, that's the value of culture, you know? Like, I mean, the Spurs have dealt with stuff like that before. And, you know, the Spurs are in a similar situation where they have an inclusive coach. They have a really talented GM. They have a player like Damian, except like Tim, right? Who, you know, is, we're all in this together. And they have a bunch of quality, good character guys like Evan Turner. I think you're right. He does fit into that locker room well. Guys like Aminu, Ed Davis just, you know, grinds. He does what he's told, and
we love Ed Davis in Portland.
He goes to work. You know, he has a undeniable positive effect on 4 through 5 when he's number 5, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so anything could happen, right? I think that a lot of teams are going to deal with contention when it comes to that. But,
you know, like I said, the big thing that happened in my mind for the Trailblazers is that they legitimized a culture, and I think that that will be significant for them when it comes to that, because I think there's going to be some controversy. Like, you know, the play hasn't even started after this offseason, and I think that people are, like, sort of mentioning it a little bit, but don't realize history says NBA players do not like it. Like, John Wall is not going to be happy about Bradley Beal. If Bradley Beal doesn't come out and kick ass next year, that's going to be a problem. Anyways.
You know, I think Damian Lillard was smart enough to see this coming, and which is why he spent a bunch of time building up the camaraderie on the team.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at this point, we have guys who have shown that they would do anything for each other. And, you know, hopefully that will translate into not looking at each other with dollar signs in their eyes. Because, you know, hopefully they're going to be together for quite a while. And then, you know, speaking of history, I was just watching the 2000 Western Conference Finals with these other guys who do Holy Backboard, which is another Portland Trailblazer podcast. And we were talking about the Western Conference series of 1999-2000. And that was the year that the Blazers traded six players to get Scottie Pippen. So the Blazers had been growing, they had their nucleus, and then they traded six players so that they could get in Scottie Pippen, and they also brought in Steve Smith. And that team was fantastic. It was amazing. But they had grown for a couple years before they added that final piece. And at that point, Paul Allen, who is still our owner, showed that he was willing to go deep, deep, deep into his pockets to pay for that final piece. And I'm not drawing direct parallels, but I'm saying that we've had an owner who has shown that he could be patient with a team as they grow and establish themselves, and then is willing to go into his pockets to pay for that final piece. So, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed that it turns out, if not this year, you know, then a couple of years from now, that we'll be making those deep, deep runs.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's probably a couple of subjects to touch on. I'm going to briefly say that Harkless looks dangerously like Jeff Green. That's, you know, just going to throw that bait out there so that people can get upset. Follow me on Twitter, at Almighty Prophet. Get upset. Go ahead. I'm ready for it.
So can you give me your elevator pitch on why you think that Mo Harkless resembles Jeff Green?
Okay. All right. I'm going to describe a player. Okay. Tell me who it is. He's 6'9", combo, small forward, power forward, with great length, great athleticism, huge potential on both sides of the ball, and people call him a stretch four, even though he shoots like 29% from three. Who am I describing?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to argue because I don't know enough about Jeff Green. I do have a little thing about guys named Green because Blazers 2 years ago really had a problem beating teams with guys named Green. So I was like on the bandwagon that we needed to get a guy named Green, any guy named Green, because it would help our winning percentage. But that didn't happen. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with Mo, and we haven't really had much time to talk about him, and I don't really know if anybody really knows what's going to happen with
that's
Mo.
True.
He's another one of those guys who has a lot of potential, and he may be exactly what we need, and he may be exactly what somebody else needs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that it's a two-edged sword, or a double-edged sword, that teams think, hey, I have this raw piece, I can teach him how to shoot. Like, we'll be the team that will add this final piece to this player developmentally.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, on one hand, the Trailblazers decided that, and if that doesn't work out, that sucks. But on the other hand, another team will be willing to roll that dice if the Trailblazers decide that that's not going to happen. I'm saying it's dangerous. I'm not even saying that I know one way or the other, because I think it's impossible to know. But, you know, I think we did a great job today. I especially think we did a great job finishing that final bullet point there. Just quick, 5 minutes, like, boom, just like Dame pulling up from 30 feet, nailing that, you know, Harkless three right there. Like, just...
Dang.
The final dagger. No, Luol Deng, he's on the Lakers now.
Oh my gosh, have you been waiting to make that joke for a really long time?
No, I just did that off the
cuff. Just came up with that, huh? I'm impressed.
That's why you, the listener, listen to this podcast, because I've got Deng jokes that I think of in split seconds, so really proud of that.
really proud that I was here today to talk with Tara of the Joe and Tara Blazers Edge subdivision of their podcast.
The Fanalist Edition. We call ourselves the Fanalist Edition of the Blazers Edge podcast.
Yes. Also, you had a podcast recently. I remember when I was listening to it, I was picking up one of my drunk friends. But you were talking about, like, what should our name be? And you talked about, like, the soccer moms and the Fanalists and, I don't know, you talked about a bunch of different names, but you may know them by a ton of different names, but, you know, a Fanalist by any other name is just as good at breaking down the Trailblazers. So, thanks a lot for coming on. One more time for the listeners at home or on the road, can you run by your Twitter and
sure.
Do you ever write? I'm not sure I've ever read anything.
I do. I've written for Blazers Edge as well. So my
okay.
Twitter handle is at TCBBigs, TCBBIGGS.
Cool.
That's where you can find me on Twitter. I'm also called Team Mom. And I do write for Blazers Edge occasionally. I write feature articles, things like, you know, Blazers who have brothers who play in the NBA, or Blazers who have famous NBA fathers. So I don't do, you know, breakdown analysis. I do things that I think make the game more interesting to watch and make the players more interesting to know. So I do write occasionally. And I would also encourage everybody, if you haven't checked out Blazers Edge, to go check them out, because they have so much great content coming on all the time. Original content. They also round up a lot of other outlets' work, but really we have some writers who just really know how to break down and analyze what's going on and explain it in a way that even I can understand. So I encourage everybody to check out blazersedge.com as well, and listen to the other podcasts. There's a weekend edition, and then there's a Tuesday one, and then Joe and I, the Fanalists, we produce a podcast twice a month, the first Saturday and the third Tuesday. So I hope everybody will tune in.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely do that. You know, I hope the listeners at home have been, you know, checking in with these people who I'm doing team previews, because I'm picking my favorites, and that's my process of going through it. And, you know, I think Trailblazers just has a good media environment. You know, Golliver's great. Oliver Maroney is always on, and he's a great dude. So, you know, Trailblazers Media does do a great job. Blazers Edge does a great job. Joe and Tara do a great job. And we did a great job today. We knocked it out of the park. And this was a championship quality, high character podcast. I really think that.
You do a great job. Thank you. Thank you for what you're putting together. I've really been enjoying it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and thanks for coming on. Thumbs up. Great.
Okay.
And then boom, podcast is over.